1, 2, 1, 2, test. One, two. There we go. Test. 1, 2. Hello, everybody. Boom. Camera on, microphone on. Heya. Welcome to the podcast or the YouTube video or whatever you're watching this on. You're very welcome. Bit of news for you this week. I'll get to that in a second. Today we're going to talk about Africa. What's going on in Africa? It's all kicking off. It's getting a bit hot down there, and going to look into it. I'm going to show you some stuff. But before I do that, I want to let you know that this is going to be my last podcast. It's time to draw this to a close. I'll explain why at the end. So we'll get through a few stories, explain a few things, and then I'll let you know at the end what the why I'm drawing this to a close. So there we go. So let's hit it. Right, so Africa, specifically the central belt. Well, I'll show you actually. Throw a wee thing up on the screen there. So, can you see my mouse on the screen? I think you can. So we're gonna, just when that loads in, there, the Coup Belt of Africa. So this is the, let's see if I can. My burst is very slow. So anyway, here we go. So there, that bit of Africa there, right? So you see Mali, Niger, Chad, and Sudan. It goes through the middle. If you're listening to this, you're not going to see. But just below the very northern African countries, you know, the Algerias, Morocco's, Egypt's at the top there. Then there's another belt of countries in there. As I said, away over in the far on the eastern side is Sudan, and then you've moving across to the west, Chad, Niger, Mali, and in here, it's not on the map, you've Burkina Faso. Well, there it is, actually, it's pointed out. Yes, there it is, so a little red one. Hopefully you can see this mouse. Burkina Faso, here, and that's important. You've got Guinea here. Niger. So, but Niger is the big one. That bit in the middle is a big lake. Is that? No, it's not Victoria. No, whatever. Doesn't matter. So, that's what we're going to talk about. So, there's been a coup this week in Niger. And I'm going to read an article here from the BBC. Niger coup, why some people want Russia in and France out. So this was dated 18 hours ago. So there's been a coup. There's been a military coup with the support of the people, apparently. So in a sign of growing hostility towards the West since the coup in Niger, a businessman proudly shows off his outfit in the colours of the Russian flag. And you can see there on the screen, a dude wearing basically what it says, an outfit in the colours of the Russian flag. Since the coup, there has been a war of words between the military and the West. Mr. Bazoum was a staunch ally of the West in the fight against militant Islamists and was a strong economic partner as well. That's the old Prime Minister, President. Niger hosts a French military base and is the world's seventh biggest producer of uranium. Now, I'm going to read you some stuff later in a minute, back in explaining exactly where this uranium goes, and that's kind of the interesting bit. The fuel is vital for nuclear power, with a quarter of it going to Europe, especially the former colonial power, France. And since General Abdurrahmane Tishani overthrew the president in a coup on the 26th of July, Russian colours have suddenly appeared on the street. Thousands took part in the protest in the capital, Niamey, on Sunday, with some waving Russian flags and even attacking the French embassy. So, in the words of this dude in his naughty clothing. The business, he says, I am pro-Russian and I don't like France since childhood. Well, France is the former colonial power, so I don't blame him for that. Since childhood, and I've been opposed to France. They've exploited all the riches of my country, such as uranium, petrol and gold, and the poorest Nigerians. Nigerians are unable to eat three times a day because of France. Niger is home to 24.4 million people, where 2 in 5 live in extreme poverty. So the issue is that these countries are wealthy. The mineral resources. I'll just show you this map again. So rich in mineral resources. And this is why Africa was colonized, basically carved up between France, Italy, UK, Britain. France, Italy, Britain, Belgium, Germany. Basically Europe. So here's this Twitter thread. This is from a Twitter account called DD Geopolitics that I follow. The region is known as the Coup Belt of Africa, and a few things to think about. There is a vast abundance of resources, including labour, oil, mineral and deposits. And a guy I'm going to introduce you to in a moment explains this. It's got the highest concentration of Western bases on the continent. It should tell you everything you need to know. With tiny Djibouti hosting an astounding 7 foreign nations, it cuts clear across the continent, dividing the Northern Africans from the Sub-Saharan Africans, and a divide easily and often exploited. So I showed you on that map, the original map, yeah? This is what they refer to as up here. I'm trying to get it right by the screen. Up here, yeah. This is the coup belt. There's a little statistic there at the bottom. The number of coups in 2020 to 22, and these countries have all, Sudan, Chad, Niger, Guinea, and Burkina Faso have all had a coup or a multiple coup just in a couple of years. And there's the dates is all around, so you can see that yourself. Okay, so see, so this is the next picture. Why is my thing so slow? That's fucking nuts. Countries in Africa with the highest numbers of coups since 1952, failed and successful. And you can see there, Sudan, remember I was saying about Sudan being away over in the east coast, in the Gulf, like Gulf region. This is for the people that are listening, not the people that are watching. Sudan, 17 coups. Next door neighbour to the west, Chad, 7 coups. Next door neighbour to the west, Niger, 8 coups. Nigeria, 8 coups. Benin, 8 coups. Burkina Faso, 10. Mali, 8. Ghana, 10. Sierra Leone, 10. Guinea-Bissau, 9. And then down here, Comoros, which I'm going to really embarrass myself here. I've never heard of that country. I'm up there with 9 as well. So, and here is another map, which explains. So, we'll just take a few countries that we've mentioned, right? Sudan, Chad, Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso. Those are the main ones I'm interested in right now. And this graphic shows you the top minerals per country, the most abundant resource for each African country per ton of production. And there in Sudan, that, it's colour-coded, petroleum. Yeah, so it's petroleum. Sudan is petroleum. Chad, its neighbour, petroleum. Niger, its neighbour, petroleum. Burkina Faso, coal. I think that's what that colour is. These colours aren't very good, actually. It's hard to read. Mali, gold. Right? You know, the former colonial power for Mali is France as well, right? So you're looking, and then in the countries all around, these are resource-rich countries. All of them, all of Africa is full of resources, but it's really poor. And there's people living in poverty. And this is what we're getting to. The people are getting fucked off with. They're fed up. They're revolting. And remember, you know how I keep talking about BRICS and the alliance between Russia, China, and this new BRICS economy that's going to be, or BRICS currency, trading currency, that's going to be coming into effect, I think, in September. This is what's given these countries an impetus to revolt and get rid of their former colonial powers and reorganize their economic structures. Now, it has to be said, a lot of these places are corrupt as fuck, but this is what the people are revolting against as well. It's not just against the ancient history or the connections that have been made through colonialism. It's also their own people and their own governments that are corrupt. And we know all about that living where we live. So you can see there, I mean, just going down that list, titanium, copper, gold, zinc, diamond, sulfur, phosphates, petroleum, and then Niger, it's one of the biggest. We'll get to it. I'm jumping ahead of myself here, so we'll get to it in a second. So this is another map, and this is the one that shows you the military bases, right? So again, we'll just take these countries. Sudan, so you've South Sudan. South Sudan. You've got military bases in Sudan. France, America. That looks like, I don't know what that flag is. Iran, maybe? No. China, Germany, Japan, Italy, and it's either Saudi Arabia, Yes, and sorry, that bottom one is UAE. So that's Sudan. And then we move across to Chad. They've got a French base and an American base. Niger, America, Germany, Italy, and France. Mali, France, Britain, Belgium, and Germany. That's a Belgian flag, I think, yes. And you can see there, it shows you the maps. Oh, there's a little key. India, no. United Arab Emirates. Sorry, that one I was struggling with is United Arab Emirates. And the other one was Saudi Arabia, correct. So you can see there, basically, and it's all sort of focused along that middle. There's one down there in Botswana and one down there in Madagascar and things like that. But it's all across that. And it's not by accident. Okay. It's not by accident that those military bases are in this region that is basically seriously unstable. Showed you the amount of coups, they call it the coup belt, since the 1950s. And I would say the people would argue one way that, well, it would be more unstable because of if this military presence wasn't there. But I would argue the opposite. I would say the military presence are not there to provide stability for anyone or security for any local person. That's not what they're there for. They never are there for that. We've had we know our own colonial past. The British didn't do anything good here on this island, and it's one of the things that makes me kind of boke a wee bit whenever you hear people sort of making excuses, you know, or saying things like, oh, it wasn't all bad. It was all bad. Just because you can point to a thing that might indicate an act of charity or an act of decency, the fact that you're there is an unstable act. It's an you're an unstabilizing force, no matter what you say. And I was listening to, it was actually a wee bit distressing listening to RFK Jr. today. He was talking with Jimmy Dore about his, really pro-Israel and kind of really anti-Palestine. And I like what he says about a lot of stuff, but obviously on that, definitely not. And there was something that he said was, he was comparing the Palestinian Authority with the Israeli Authority, how the Israeli Authority is the only democracy in the Middle East. Not true. And about how if you want to protest in the Palestinian government, you better be in Israel when you do it. Things like that. And the thing that I would like to have heard said to him was, that region has been completely undermined and colonized, and in that abnormality, you cannot create or maintain a normality. You can't do it. And Israel can't do it. They can't do it themselves. They've created for themselves an apartheid fascist state. So whenever you put these institutions, these armies, these military bases, just by virtue of the fact that they are actually there, you create instability. Not the opposite. And that's not an accident. That's by design. So back to this thread, this guy, remember we were reading from this guy's thread, the coup belt of Africa, and I showed you those graphics there, right? So there's more. It's really good. So that graphic you can see on the screen, let me see, what is he saying here? What is this titled? Exports. The biggest exports from the country, from these countries. So again, we'll go those four again. What was it? Sudan, Chad, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali. That's five, right? So go across again. Sudan, Chad, Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso. In that order, their biggest exports. Wait till you hear this. Gold, oil, uranium, cotton, and gold, in that order. Sudan, Chad, Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso. Gold, oil, uranium, cotton, gold. Now, I wonder why we would want to put our military bases in those countries. I can't think of anything just offhand. I can't think of any reason as to why people would want to put a stabilizing military force in those countries. So then you say, well, why do they not actually stabilize? Why do they not actually do what they're purporting to do? Because it's easier to get the gold, the oil, uranium, the cotton, and the gold out when everything's unstable. It's easier to corrupt the local politicians, etc., etc. Right? So, yes, sorry, and I was reading his post at the top, and he called it Sun-Saharan, which I was going to say, I'd never heard that phrase before. It's Sub-Saharan. He apologised for that in this thing. So there you go. So, that's the region. Broad strokes, very broad strokes, right? But that's the region. So, now, bring us right up to date. Well, we are up to date. The Russia-Africa summit to take place in St. Petersburg from the 27th to the 20th of July. This has just happened. Can the second Russian-Africa summit bring about a new level of mutually beneficial partnership between Russia and the continent? The heads of state from many African countries are expected to attend. I think something like 20 or 30 went. The Russia-Africa Economic Humanitarian Forum, due to take place alongside it, will provide a platform for business meetings and include a programme of more than 30 panel sessions and themic events. The summit had originally been planned to take place in Addis Ababa on October 22, but was postponed by Russia's President Vladimir Putin last July, most likely due to complications emerging from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. He probably wouldn't have been able to travel. to Addis Ababa and be safe. Because of the UN, I think the UN Charter, certain people are obliged to arrest them and shit like that, then they're not going to, obviously that's not going to happen, but just avoid it. And I dare say he was probably busy invading Ukraine. So there you go. So that's what's happened. That has happened, right? Now, if you this is cool too, because if you Google this, you'll, as I just did not so long, but a short while ago, you'll get from the AP, from the BBC, from the Guardian, from the Washington Post, all these Western outlets, and what they will explain to you how much of a failure the whole enterprise was, this summit, this African-Russian summit. But it's not been called a failure by the people that were in attendance, the actual leaders that went, right? So it's just an interesting little thing. So here, where will I take you first? I will take you to the there's this guy, the leader of Burkina Faso. Won't explain who he is, and he's fascinating. Really, really interesting cat. So this is a guy explaining what's going on. So after the coup in Niger, right? So here we go. Africa is preparing for war. This is a thread from a dude called Megatron, who specializes in breaking news, geopolitics, and war monitoring. After the coup d'etat in Niger and the removal of the French puppet from the presidential position. Okay, it's the first time we've heard that word, isn't it? But that's basically what he was. The West African organization, ECOWAS, I don't know what that stands for, but it's basically an organization of West African countries. I think it's a military alliance, which is under the full control of the United States and France, announced it would attack Niger. Yesterday, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Guinea. So you can see there on the map those countries where they are. There's those three red countries, right? And that's Niger to the east of them. Yesterday, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Guinea jointly declared that the attack on Niger is an attack on them all, and that they will intervene militarily. But the most interesting part is Algeria's statement that it will also intervene if Niger is attacked. So that's Algeria. You can see on the map there again, the people that aren't watching this won't see this, but Algeria is the country immediately to the north of Mali and Niger, sharing a big border with both of those. Today, the chief of staff of the Algerian army arrived in Moscow for a meeting with Shoigu. Algeria is likely to receive heavy weapons from Russia and Iran through its ports. The USA and France have confirmed that they support military intervention by ECOWAS, that organization, ECOWAS, de facto confirming that they are creating a new war in the world like Syria and Ukraine. The same scheme worked for them when they destroyed Libya, but today Niger has powerful support. So, some of the comments under here, is there anywhere in the world the US won't prompt a war? There's a lot of people commenting underneath that, as you would expect. So, you up to date? We good? We got this? So, now, let me introduce you to the president of Burkina Faso. Now, I'm going to play the video, but I'm going to read it because he speaks in his native language, but it is subtitled. So, this commentator says, the words of wisdom The youngest president in Africa, Ibrahim Traore, has spoken. The 35-year-old president of Burkina Faso, the youngest leader, it says Africa's story has to change, and he is currently the youngest president in the world. Traore accused African leaders of beggary at the Russian-African summit in St. Petersburg in Russia. My generation does not. This is what we're getting to. Gone the long way to get here, but this is where we are, right? My generation does not understand this. How can Africa, which has so much wealth, become the poorest continent in the world today? And why do African leaders travel the world to beg, he said. Love it. Captain, he's a military captain. I'll give you a little bit of his biography in a minute as well. Captain Ibrahim Traore has been leading Burkina Faso since September 22, following a coup d'etat that overturned the previous coup leader. He is overseeing the transition until the next elections, the date of which is still uncertain. When we, the people, decide to defend ourselves, we are labelled as militias. But that's not the problem. The real problem is seeing African leaders who do nothing for their people's fight, but echo the same sentiments as the imperialists, labelling us as militias and men who do not respect human rights. We African leaders must stop behaving like puppets who dance whenever the imperialists pull their strings. So, in this speech, and I must say, he's an extremely handsome young man. So, I'll turn him down. So, I'll read his words. The question that my generation is asking themselves are the following, if I may sum up. It is not to understand how Africa, with so much wealth on our soil, with generous nature, water, sun in abundance, Africa is today the poorest continent. Africa is a hungry continent. And how is it that our heads of state are crossing the world to beg? These are the questions that we ask ourselves that we have no answer for so far. We have the opportunity to forge new relations, talking about with Russia, and I hope that these relations can be the best to give a better future to our peoples. As for Burkina Faso, today we have been confronted for more than 8 years with the most barbaric, most violent form of neo-colonialism, imperialism, slavery still has to impose on us. So that's the end of that little piece of video. But that's who he is. And he is a soldier. He's a proper soldier. He's not cosplaying a soldier like Zelensky. But so they've gone to Russia to try and forge a new alliance. And so you'd say, well, maybe Russia aren't a great partner either. Regardless, they're basically trying to, through the shackles of the partnerships, and I do that in inverted commas, that they have, the imperialists that they've suffered for hundreds of years, get rid of them first. And maybe Russia might turn out to be a better partner, more reliable partner. So, this guy, Ibrahim Traore, where is he? I think this is the thread I want to show you. Yeah. Homeland or Death. A thread on Burkina Faso under Ibrahim Traore. So there he is. There he looks extremely menacing. This guy went to the officer school and he went and served in the war. Well, I might explain that actually here in the thing. So, short thread on Ibrahim Traore, right? On September 30th, 22, a coup d'etat took place in Burkina Faso. Paul Henri Damiba, an interim president who had also come to power via junta only 8 months prior, was deemed unable to address the ongoing Sahel insurgency in the country and became ousted. Captain Ibrahim Traoré would replace his former colleague, President Damiba, and become the world's youngest serving head of state at only 34. This thread will attempt to list his biggest achievements in Burkina Faso since coming to power in 2022. Among the first steps taken by President Traoré would be the appointment of Kalim Di Tambela as the Prime Minister of Burkina Faso. Tambela, unlike most figures in Burkinabe politics, hope I haven't pronounced that wrong. I'm going to fucking mince a lot of this, aren't I? So forgive me. Is a familiar face in the popular consciousness of this small landlocked state. Tambela, as a student in France during the 1980s, founded the Committee for the Defence of the Revolution to defend and finance the struggle waged by the Burkinabe masses under Thomas Sankara, affiliated with the communists at the time. And if you don't know who Thomas Sankara is, you need to go and do a little bit of reading. An extremely important figure in African anti-neo-colonialist politics. Tambela, as a lawyer and author, would publish his magnum opus under the title Thomas Sankara and the Revolution in Burkina Faso, an experience of self-centered development. His own detailed account of the Burkinabe Revolution as led by Thomas Sankara. And there's a picture of, I think that's Sankara himself. So, While invoking Karl Marx, Vladimir Lenin and Franz Fanon in the academic realm, Tambela would initiate his premiership with 50% cuts to the salaries of government ministers, reiterating Burkina Faso cannot develop outside the line drawn by Thomas Sankara. Meanwhile, President Traoré himself, refusing to take any presidential salary, remains on the same income he had as a military captain. In order to show the spirit of sacrifice which must inhabit the Burkinabe in the current situation of our country. Simultaneously, President Traoré remains faithful to the will of the Burkinabe masses to follow in the footsteps of Mali under President Assimi Goïta, whose decision to withdraw Mali as another puppet in the French pre-carrière, I don't know what that means, is causing shockwaves in the region. The liberation of the Malian masses under President Goïta represents alternative future for the states in the Francafrique. Again, another word I've never heard before, but I'm sure French colonies. Anyway, so back to the thing. Additionally, Mali has taken measures to ban French state media such as France 24, Radio France International, until further notice. This policy has held sway in Burkina Faso, with a correspondent from France 24 summoned before the Burkinabe Council of Superior Communication. Any definite conclusion from these tensions remain to be seen, given ongoing mutual nature of the dispute. Nevertheless, President Traoré continues to express and fight for the problems raised by the Burkinabe masses, as seen via the demands to dismiss Luc Hallad, the French ambassador, coupled with calls for the uncompromising expulsion of French troops from Burkina Faso. So these bases that we spoke about at the start, out the fuck. By the start of 23, Jean-Emmanuel Ouédraogo, the Minister of Communication, confirmed that Burkina Faso had given French troops 1 month to evacuate the country, ending the agreement signed between the two states in 2018, and this was fulfilled by February 2023. The administration ushered in by President Traoré had emphasised that whilst these actions will not end diplomatic relations with France, the approach of this new government represents a new dynamic, changing order internationally as well as regionally. Today, various grassroots Pan-African patriotic organizations are calling for closer relationships with Russia as an emerging power which, unlike France, this is what we're getting to, has no history of covert regime change, monetary slavery, and economic subjugation on the continent. Tambele, during an interview with Russia Today, stated, Tambele, "We would like Russia to take its rightful place as a great nation in my country because there is an experience of Russia which we would like to share that with us as a view shared by the Burkinabe population." Similarly, earlier this year, Tambele also met with Ali Bagheri, the Iranian deputy foreign minister, agreeing upon the formation of a joint commission between Iran and Burkina Faso to enter session in Ouagadougou in the near future. Please forgive my pronunciations. Tambele was also invited to Tehran to discuss the recently proposed creation of an airline linking Tehran and Ouagadougou, which would place the Burkinabe capital city as a sub-regional hub for the Iran air in West Africa, despite the novelty of the Traoré presidency. Bagheri stated, "Our two countries have the firm will to strengthen their relations in economic, political and health fields. In the near future, the new Iranian ambassador will move to Ouagadougou. Oh, I fucked that, haven't I? Burkina Faso has also decided to reopen its embassy in Tehran. Now, so I'm going to skip through these because there's quite a wee bit more to go. Let me see, I'm just scanning. Right, I'm going to skip to the end. Actually, no, I'm not going to. So, there's Thomas Sankara there. You see a picture of him on the screen? What they did to that man was truly monstrous. So, gonna skip. Dead air. Stay with me. Right, here we go, to the end. Finally, only in 2023 were Thomas Sankara and his 12 assassinated associates provided proper burials. Mushbila Sankara, his uncle, would state, "This is the first time I've seen Catholics, Protestants and Muslims perform the same ceremony. It's a sign of union." So whenever you take your own path, get the fucking colonialists out. And with good people and goodwill, you can create union, true union. The intimate event was reserved for close family members of the Sankara, but a large public event is planned for October 15, 23, the anniversary of Sankara's assassination. There are plans to make the Thomas Sankara Memorial Site public in due time. Overall, President Traoré is leading for less than a year, has demonstrated an outstanding that the only one true justice for the Sankara's martyrdom is revolution. The time has come for patriots everywhere to defend his struggle for sovereignty being waged on West Africa." And then someone has commented underneath, "This will usher in a new era for West Africa, maybe even for the continent. At last shall effective independence take place." So, that's who he is. He's very impressive. And when you see him talk, he seems so fucking single-minded when he talks, and I hope to God he doesn't turn out just to be another corrupt military coup leader. But so there he is, and I'm not going to read any more about this because I've read enough, but you get the point. Mali, Burkina Faso warn against any foreign military intervention in Niger. So that's from Africa News. And then from, well, yeah, just to give you the other side of the coin, France 24, Burkina Faso, Mali say military intervention in Niger would be a direct declaration of war. So there we go. What do you think of that? I it's fascinating to me, all that stuff. It really is. Blows my mind. And again, Niger provide uranium. God damn it. That was the word I couldn't remember earlier on, even though I read it on the map. Niger provides a massive amount of France's uranium that it's needed. France gets most of its energy from nuclear power plants, and they provide, and the uranium comes from Niger. And Niger this week have ceased exports of uranium and gold to France. Just, that's it, done. You're not getting it anymore. Now, that's a massive blow to the French economy and infrastructure, both domestic and commercial, I would suggest. And this is why they're going to invade Niger. Now, I seen someone mentioning earlier, these countries are going to be hard to invade because they're actually landlocked, so you can't get there by sea. So everyone's going to have to come by air, or, you know. So it's, I just hope to God that they don't do what they did in Syria and Libya and things like that. And I hope these countries are going to be able to hold out. And I'm going to keep an eye on this for, well, not going forward for you, because I'll explain a bit more about that in a minute. So there we go. What do you think? Done with that. So I want to, just a couple of quick articles here. These are separate, all completely separate, but my news feed is full of these. BP's £2 billion profits cause anger amid climate crisis. Now, I would say it hasn't caused anger amid climate crisis. It's caused anger amid people who can't afford to fucking heat their homes or pay for diesel or petrol to put in their cars. The oil and gas company to return another $1.5 billion to investors through a share buyback. So while we were all struggling, while we've all been struggling, while we lost our businesses, while we lost our jobs, while we had to live on beans after, because of lockdowns and all the knock-on effect since then, and now we're into a global recession, the threat of wars all over the place, these fuckers are just hoovering up the money. And they're doing not only at the behest, but without any interference from your local government. I would say that they're doing it with the assistance of them. And I saw another one today. Tesco's was another one, posting record profits. All these companies are all posting record profits. And then they'll tell us, oh, there's nothing we can do. Oh, jeez, nothing we can do. Yeah, there's plenty we can do. We can fucking nationalise them. A lot of them. I hate these fuckers. Anyway, so I'm going to click a few things here. This is a funny one. To share this with you, I only saw this today. So it's Les Dennis on Family Fortunes, and he's got his arm around Rishi Sunak, and he says, "We've asked people to name a cheap form of public transport. You said helicopter." That fucking blew me away. Blew me away. Love that. And then, as you probably know, without a doubt, do know, Sinead O'Connor died. In a statement, the singer's family said, "It's with great sadness that we announce the passing of our beloved Sinead. Her family and friends are devastated and requested privacy at this time." So, I don't need to tell you guys who Sinead O'Connor was. You know very well who she is and what she meant. She was a one in a million. One in a billion. So there's the other one. That was the one I wanted to show you. British Gas. So it was BP. There's British Gas's profits soar by a staggering 889%. And they'll have people queuing up, writing articles and appearing on the TV to defend it. Well, fuck you. You get no defending from me. So there we go. That's me. I'm done. This is the last. This is it. I'm out. So I'm going to... Yeah. So I would advise you to keep an eye on that Burkina Faso, Niger, Mali situation. I hope these people manage to finally shake, free themselves from the shackles of their imperialist colonial past, and that their children and their children's children get to enjoy a bright and beautiful future, which no doubt isn't going to be gifted to them. They're going to have to fight for this, and I hope they do it, and I hope they get it. So there's me. That's me. I'm done. So, as I said, this is my last one. I'm not going to... We're going to pull the plug on the podcast, on the project. I told you at the start that I would explain my reasoning, and this is it. When I started this podcast, I had an idea for it, that I would want to interview people and go and see things and report specific, you know, not necessarily go out with cameras into the field and do all that shit, but, you know, more talking with other people and getting people involved in the project. And I haven't been able to do it, not because I'm incapable of it, or not that because people wouldn't come, because everybody that I did ask to come be interviewed was interviewed. I just simply do not have the time. And it kind of breaks my heart a wee bit, because I think that I could, whatever my weekly audience is, I know the numbers are 600-700 people regularly across all the different platforms. I think I could easily turn this into a couple of thousand, or maybe a few more than, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 a week. Now, in the leftist podcast and YouTube channel-y world, that's quite significant. That's quite a lot. But I think I could have done that. But because I've been unable to, it kind of torments me a little bit. And I've been unable to because I do not have the actual bandwidth to do it the way I would like. So I feel like I've been limping along. And as much as I enjoy coming out here and doing this, and I do enjoy this, this is quite cathartic for me. And I'll feel better when I leave. When I think about it tomorrow, I'll be disappointed. And that's kind of the way it is. I feel better when I leave the studio tonight, but tomorrow I'll be a bit disappointed and going, yeah, whatever. So that's why I'm going to, and quite simply, I've got so many other projects, so many other things to do. I'm in the course of recording and writing three albums, three different records. I'm actually writing a book as well. I don't know if that'll ever see the light of day, but I'm writing it anyway. And of course, I've got a business, I've a printing business and all this sort of stuff that I have to run when I'm not playing music with my bands. So quite simply, I feel like I haven't delivered what it was intended to, but I feel like I could if I didn't have all the other things, but all the other things are more important. The music specifically is more important, and this takes up bandwidth. Quite simply, it just literally does. It takes up bandwidth. So, for that reason, I'm going to call it a day, and this is my final one. Now, I don't know if I'll ever come back to it. I don't feel right now that I will, and I know I've taken breaks in the past, but this isn't a break. I'm actually officially pulling the plug. So I want to thank you all for giving me your time and your ear. I hope you learned something. I know I did. I've learned so much along the way, and that's the thing about me before I was I threw myself into commentating on these issues, I was a passive observer. And then when I decided to do this, I had to become a bit more of an active observer. So I definitely have learned a lot. And if I'm going to take anything out of this, I will say this: my worldview going into this and doing all this reading and doing all this presenting these issues and stories to you guys, my worldview going into it was the correct one. And so I would say to you guys as well that if you're coming from a leftist, anti-imperialist, pro-United Ireland position, pro-humanity position, I would reinforce your belief to be correct. I would tell you that you're right. You're the right. It's the right way to be. It's the right way to think, and it's the right view of the world to have. So, I want to thank you all for giving me your ear. If you did more than once, I really do appreciate it. But most of all, I really, really, really want to thank my patrons. When I finish here, I'll be going, and immediately once this is processing, I will immediately shut down the Patreon page. And I want to thank you all really for just you guys give me some of your money, which is nuts, but I'm grateful for it. I appreciate it. Bought this microphone. And this microphone is being used on various records that are being made, and all these podcasts, as you know. So, thank you for that. So, that's it. We're done. We're gonna call it. So, don't go over to Patreon. Do go over to Instagram and Twitter. I'm keeping those going, because they're just me just slobbering, just putting things on Twitter and Instagram. I was going to keep those until I decide not to. But yeah, there we go. I'm out. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. Bye.